I'm going to tell you about work I've been doing recently with people in the David Hughes and Steve Tobias on the formation of coherent structure due to mighty buoyancy instabilities. So from this vectometogram here, we can see that the magnetic field emerges at the surface of the sun with different polarities in different hemisphere here, white. Black and black, black white at the top. So, and the structure of the magnetic field here also suggests that it merges as a field that should be stored as a toroidal field below the surface, and with different polarities in different hemisphere. And estimation of the time the field might take to rise from the interior of the sun, or even simulation of magnetic convection suggests that the field actually is stored at the base of the convection zone in the form of strong toroidal magnetic field. This is what Nick presented in the morning. And the picture people have in mind is that the strong toroidal magnetic field is stored in the convective, at the bottom of the convection zone. And then due to some instability rises in the convection zone, and then emerges at the surface to form active regions and sunspot and active regions. And the mechanism to transport the magnetic field from the stably stratified region here into the convection zone and above is a magnetic buoyancy instability. And so it makes a link between the two region here. So it's part, an important part in the interface dynamo problem. And it's also the mechanism that leads to the formation of active regions. And we just want to understand a bit more about this instability here. So the idea is that if you've got a stratified horizontal magnetic field, in a stratified atmosphere, then if the field increases with depth, it tends to support more gas that would be possible in its absence. And so energy can be released, gravitational potential energy, and leads to instability, and it's been studied by Newcomb and Parker in the 60s. And people have been criteria, linear instability criteria for these instabilities. And actually, there are two families of modes for magnetic buoyancy instabilities. Nick has presented one type of mode in the morning, which are interchange modes, so basically 2D modes. And these modes happen when basically the gradient of B over rho across the layer is greater than basically the Brunn-Fassa frequency. And now if you consider the transport coefficient of the system, then it's eta, which is the relativity over the thermal conductivity times the Brunn-Fassa frequency, which is a positive number in a stably stratified atmosphere. So if this criteria is satisfied, then you would tend to trigger 2D mode or interchange mode. Now if you consider, another family of possible unstable modes are the underlying modes, so fully 3D mode. And these modes are triggered only when the gradient of the magnetic field, not the gradient of B over rho, where rho is density, but only the gradient of B is greater than the same value, the same quantity. So what happens is that you would expect these modes to be triggered first because it's easier, they just start for a smaller slope or smaller gradient of the magnetic field, okay? So in general, you would see these modes first and then interference modes. And there are important questions related to these modes. When you observe active region, you see a 3D structure. Well, are these 3D structures observed a direct consequence of the linear instability, or is it a secondary due to secondary instability like Nick presented today? And also, what is the how did the instability saturates in the nonlinear regime? And actually, what are the effect? What is the effect of the instability on the transport coefficient? So we wanted to address some of these questions, and to do that, just present the equations we want to solve. So basically, this is a compressible MHD in a box, a Cartesian box, periodic in x and y, say, and stratified in z. And we non-dimensionalize the equation, so using the temperature density at the top, and the length, scale length is just the depth of the box. And the time scale is sound speed, sound crossing time at the top of the box. And we solve continuity equation, equation of state, and momentum equation, here the energy is solved in the form of the temperature equation and induction equation. So the parameters were, well, the dimensionless parameters are the temperature gradient at the bottom of the layer, the adiabatic index, M, a measure of the non-dimensional heating, heat diffusion of heat, the Prandtl number, the ratio of resistivity over heat conduction, and here the strength of the magnetic field. These are our parameters, okay? And then you want to look at the stability of a layer, of a stratified layer. So the first type of studies that have been performed is well, looking at the instability of a, well, this is a static study, so there is no shear flow like in the previous talk in the morning by Nick. Here, U is zero, okay? So we just look at a case when you've got a slab of magnetic field defined by this well, profile here, Bx in the x direction, just made by two terms. And then you can solve for T, well, in some energy equation, just gives you that T is basically linear because the ohmic heating is very small here. Theta is very small. And then you can solve the vertical balance, and it gives you the profile for rho, which is given here. Okay, and you can see that for sufficiently narrow jumps here, you would trigger the 2D mode first. And this is what Nick saw in the morning. But here we don't have U. U is zero. And yeah, one comment is that this is not a true equilibrium. Bx here is not a solution of the induction equation. Okay, it diffuses away. But the instability grows on very short time scales compared to the diffusion time scale. So it's not a major issue. And there has been a very neat work on these problems by Cattaneau and Dukes in 88, and later on by Matthews and collaborator and Withing in collaborator, on the evolution of this magnetic layer here. And basically, this is what Nick showed in the morning. You can see that first, the layer evolved through the magnetic buoyant instability, and some flux rises here in the atmosphere. But as the flux rises, there is an interaction of counter-rotating vortices that tends to bring some magnetic flux downwards. And actually, later on, the magnetic, well, the structure evolves just on a dissipative time scale. So actually, a significant part of the magnetic flux doesn't rise in the atmosphere, but it's carried down by the well, due to interaction of counter-rotating vortices. And this is a 2D problem. If you look at the same 3D problem, then you can see that the 3D structures appear, but not due to the primary instability, which is magnetic buoyancy, but due to a secondary instability, as Nick said, which is basically the Crow instability, the instability of two counter-rotating vortices, the sort of trailing vortices behind planes. The problem with this study here is that, well, it's a rundown computation. It doesn't tell you much about the long-term behavior of the instability, because once the layer has been disrupted, well, it's not buoyant anymore and it's gone. The other way to do it would be to force the instability using a shearing flow, as Nick did. But in that case, you've got a mixture of everything, and it's hard to understand what's what. So the other way to address this problem is to look at a, well, consider basic state, which is true equilibrium of the the equilibrium equation of the basic, well, of the stationary equation, and just understand the instability. So we look at the profile which at a basic state, which is a solution of the stationary equation. So here the induction equation, in the absence of U, becomes just d2z by dz, well, d2bx by dz2 equals 0. Bx can only be a linear function of z, of depth. And this is what I've represented here. You can just as a free parameter of the slope of the magnetic field, okay, the gradient of the magnetic field. And then you can solve for the temperature. And this is just basically the ohmic heating that defines the temperature. So basically, it's just a linear function. And then the vertical equilibrium tells you about the density profile. And you can see on the last picture here, if the gradient of the magnetic field is strong, then you end up with a scenario which is a bottom-up situation where the fluid is top-heavy. Okay, so it's clearly unstable. But then if you decrease slightly the gradient of the magnetic field, Well, the atmosphere is not top heavy anymore, as you see here on the dashed line. And if you look at the two criteria here that I showed before, the linear stability criteria, you can see that for the dashed line, underlying modes are unstable. It's in red. You can see it. And interference modes are marginally stable. And if you decrease the gradient of the magnetic field further, then what you can see is that the interference modes are stable. The criteria is not satisfied. But the underlying modes are unstable. So you just trigger 3D modes, not 2D modes. And we want to consider this case. So we have a basic state with a linear field here and an atmosphere, which is the solution of the steady state equation. And so the I'm going to present two cases here. And the parameter that I've used are the polytropic index 5/3. The temperature gradient at the bottom is theta equal 2. So this is the adiabatic index. The polytropic index is 1.6. So it's pretty satisfied. And this is the heat conduction, Prandtl number, and ratio of eta over kappa, that are 10 to the minus 2. And this is the strength of the magnetic field, or the beta parameter. And we choose basically the gradient of the magnetic field such that only 3D modes are unstable. So if you do the linear theory, and if you solve the linear problem, you can see that actually modes that are unstable, modes of the form exponential of I, k, plus ky are unstable only if L and K are both non-zero for non-zero growth rate. So these modes are 3D modes. There is no interference mode here. There is no mode with L equals zero unstable. And one important feature of these unstable modes is that it's highly anisotrope. The values of L and K are completely different. Okay, to study this problem, you need to be compressible and highly anisotrope. So the mode is upon different scales in x and y. So let's say we have our box, which is anisotrope. There is an aspect ratio of 1 to 4, I think, here. And the magnetic field originally is in this x direction here, and this is the z direction, which is the specification direction. You just perturb this equilibrium, well, the basic state with an eigen mode. Okay, so I just pick up the most unstable eigen mode from the graph I showed before, and I just put it as a perturbation to the basic state, and I let it go. So I've got a linear regime here where the instability just grows, and then there is some nonlinear reorganization here. What happens is that you've got the magnetic points instability bring some magnetic flux upwards. You've got sort of very broad expansion of the magnetic field and narrow structure that pulls some magnetic field down here. This is an isosurface of magnetic energy. These are not field lines. You've got magnetic field all over the place here. But it's just the evolution of a layer which was in the mid-plane initially. And after a while, you can see that it's been completely disrupted. And actually, it shows the notch structure. And actually, what happens at this time, if you look at the profile of Bx, the horizontal magnetic field as a function of that, starting with a linear profile here in black, you can see that at this stage, which is basically here in time, the profile of Bx as a function of Z has been reduced, or the gradient has been reduced in a significant fraction of the domain. Okay, so basically the magnetic points involved in order to kill the mechanism that triggers it. So there is no gradient. The gradient of magnetic field has been reduced in a significant part of the domain. But it's increased here. So actually there is secondary instability. And the secondary instability, provides the evolution of the magnetic field again further. And at later stage, the profile of the magnetic field as a function of that is given by the red curve here. And it's a steady state. So the system ends up in a steady state, where the gradient of the magnetic field has been reduced everywhere in the layer. But it can't be equal to zero because we force the gradient to be non-zero through the boundary condition. Here we impose the gradient of the magnetic field to be a constant at the top and the bottom. Okay, this is how we force the instability. We just impose the gradient of the the Bx at the boundary. Now, instead of perturbing the basic state with an eigenmode, so a very clean derivation, if we perturb with some random noise, then basically we get the same nonlinear evolution first and a nonlinear reorganization similar to the one we had before. But later on, the evolution is completely different, and actually a secondary instability develops. And this secondary instability creates coherent structures. Okay, so you can see up here you've got a secondary instability with oscillations here. This is a snapshot of what happens maybe around here, something exactly, but probably around here. So you've got the oscillation, the system of different frequencies. Okay, these graphs, these three graphs show here V2, VY, so V transverse to the magnetic field, and VZ in the vertical direction as a function of time. And you can see in this graph here that what this means is that you've got the flow that the flow goes into two opposite directions and brings some magnetic flux together. And this magnetic flux is buoyantly unstable, and so it rises in the atmosphere. And that these rises get disrupted, and the flow, the horizontal flow, goes the other way around. And as it goes the other way around, it creates another concentration of flux here, and it just reproduces itself forever. So this is a self-coherent mechanism to produce concentration of magnetic field. And so this is just a movie that shows the same thing as before. Okay, so here we've got, flow that converges tend to bring the magnetic flux together. So it forms a coherent structure. This coherent structure is then buoyant. It rises in the atmosphere. As it rises, there is a divergence of flow, so it disrupts it, and then it forms somewhere else later on. And this process is just carry on forever. But one thing is that there is magnetic field everywhere in space here. And when I'm talking about coherent structure, I'm not talking about flux tube. I'm talking about concentration of energy. There is no twist in the field here. Okay? The field is primarily in this the direction perpendicular to the plane here. These calculations have been done for beta equal 4 or something, four. And in the case, if you consider now beta equal 2, so a larger magnetic field, we get the same sort of behavior, but the time scales are now much faster. And we get, again, the linear evolution of the system, a nonlinear reorganization, and then this secondary instability. And here we've got a traveling wave. It's the formation of concentration of magnetic flux that's traveling time here. So again, this is time. V2, magnetic energy. VY, the velocity across the magnetic field, and VZ. So it's basically the same mechanism. The thing that you may say here is that this mechanism relies on the fact that everything is confined in a small box. So if you had a larger box, then you wouldn't create these structures. But actually, what happens in the next slide is that the structure here, the coherent structure, tends to form on much smaller scale. And I'll show you just the movie quickly. Basically, the mechanism is exactly the same. So the flow tends to converge and create concentration of magnetic field. But it's unstable, rises in the atmosphere, and then gets disrupted. But it's nothing to do with the boundary. Okay? And also, you've got, period when these concentrations do not occur anymore, and then they happen again later on. So, the conclusion, just that this is a first attempt to try to understand the dynamics behind magnetic buoyancy and instability in non-trivial systems, but there is much more work to do, actually. And we know that if we want to understand this sort of mechanism in the context of the cyclotron, then we need to consider the interaction of this instability with shear flow and shear instability, as it has shown. And also, we'd like to do some more realistic computation. Thank you.
So as Nick showed, in the presence of strong shear and magnetic buoyancy instabilities, you will get non-axisymmetric Kelvin-Helmholtz instabilities. But I was wondering about whether you had an idea of what happens to the Crow instability in the presence of shear, the one that you presented already at the beginning.
Why is it here? Yeah, I don't know how it could affect the core instability. You know?
No.
Right. Because actually you worked on this problem, so.
Does anybody know?
No, I have no idea how it could affect the instability now.
Somebody must have an idea.
Yeah, we don't. I don't know.
No. This was for a layer that was all dead straight in one direction,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you guys looked at what happens when
okay,
you have this?
Okay, that's a good point, yeah. I've not tried that, but that's a thing, something I'd like to do. And actually, you could even bring some, you could trigger some tearing mode that could actually make some twist. And actually, this could keep the coherent structure alive for longer. But yeah, this is the next step. Sure, it's a way to get a coherent structure.
Do you think that this process you identified to produce these coherent structures survives if you go to a much weaker field, even with the strongest we might assume in the Taco client, beta is still 10 to the 5?
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to extrapolate these things. This is for a stronger field, and this is in the case of a weaker field. And but one is beta equal 8, maybe, and the other one is beta equal 2. So. Nothing to do with that, a real system. Hard to separate, maybe.
Anyone else?
Thank you.